Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to my interview series, my conversation series, my chats with people, the series that I don't have a name for yet. Taking suggestions, let me know. This is episode number 3. It is yet again another riveting, fascinating conversation. I'm going to jump right into it for y'all. I'm not going to beat around the bush. The conversation is the meat of this podcast, of this video. Hi, hello, I'm your host, Connor Franta. Today's podcast, today's interview is with Jess Fuentes, yet another person from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Total coincidence, total accident. We already had so much in common just because of that. Jess is a child of immigrants. Jess's parents came to the U.S. over 20 years ago, undocumented. So Jess talks about what that process was like growing up, the secrets she had to keep, the secrets her parents had to keep, the emotional trauma that comes with keeping secrets like that, the danger, and, you know, the hope that comes with eventually becoming an American citizen. So it was a really fascinating conversation. I really enjoyed her point of view and everything that she brought to the table. And I think that you will too. So without further ado, please click the like button. Go take a second. It really, really helps us out. Leave a comment down below. Join the conversation. Give us 5 stars across all audio platforms and enjoy my interview with Jess.
Okay, cool.
Today, I am here with a lovely other person with her lovely other story. Jess, could you do me a favor and introduce yourself to the audience and let them know your pronouns, your line of work, whatever you want?
Yeah, my name's Jess. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I work at a bookstore called Wild Rumpus, where I do some event coordinating and social media work there, as well as book selling.
That's so exciting. How funny, by the way, I've had my last guest was from Minneapolis too, coincidentally, because I'm from Minnesota. So it's so,
yeah.
It's just so funny that the people that are aligning happen to be from where I'm from.
I know, it's a small world. I was actually listening to that podcast over, I think yesterday or this morning.
Oh, wonderful.
Heard that person was from Minnesota and I was like, that's so crazy.
it's a total coincidence. It's wonderful. You have such an interesting story. As soon as you sent me your DM, I thought this is an important story to tell. This is a taboo story to tell. And this, I can only imagine, is a stressful story to live. So I would love for you to kind of walk us through a little, you know, just a little bit of your childhood, a little bit of your parents' experience, and thus your experience as being an undocumented immigrant in the United States.
Yeah. So my parents have been undocumented for the first 21 years of my life. I'm 27 now, but for the first 21 years of my life, they were undocumented. And I found out pretty young what it meant to be undocumented. Because I remember when I was 6 years old, I was watching this Nickelodeon show. And I don't know if anyone else has like a memory of the show, but it was like a news show, but for kids, but it was still very real.
Okay.
Like it was about grown-up topics, but they just catered it towards kids. And I remember watching an episode where there was an undocumented family, and that's kind of when I was like, oh, that's what being undocumented means. And that's when, like, since then I've always known what being undocumented really was, and I felt that real fear of it. And I've had to keep this a secret for so long because it's something that you can't just go around saying that family members are undocumented, because it's also a safety issue.
Totally. And like when you first told me about the secrecy of it, I was aware of that, but I had never once related it to what it was like growing up knowing that I was gay but not telling anyone, where it felt like, you know, it caused me daily stress. It was something I was always carrying, but maybe people weren't aware of, except, you know, there were potential repercussions for that. But for yours, you know, there are very real potential negative things that could happen. What was that like? At what point did you realize that as well, that this was, you know, a serious thing that could happen?
Yeah. So I unfortunately did have like an uncle who was undocumented, and he actually did end up being deported. So having him be deported was really the wake up call to how much of a secret I had to keep this. And it made me realize how terrifying it was.
How old were you?
I think I was in sixth grade, I believe. Okay. Definitely in that middle school era. So I was definitely like old enough to start learning more about what being undocumented meant. And, you know, his kids were around my age too. So it was really hard seeing family members who grew up just a couple minutes away be taken away like that, and like having to go to Mexico, even though they've all lived here for years and years.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, your entire life that you've built and lived for years, decades, even, like you said, your parents were 21 years. I can't imagine just having that all of a sudden completely changed and being brought to a place that frankly you don't know or have never known or for sure don't know anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was definitely always a fear of mine, was like, because I'm a citizen of the U.S. I was born here, but obviously if my parents had ever gotten deported, I would have obviously moved to Mexico. But then we also did have like backup plans of like, well, if you did want to stay in the U.S., you could stay with your aunt here or your uncle over there. So it was just scary. Just, I don't know. It was always like this weird thing, knowing that I had places to go to, but I could also go to Mexico at any single time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very scary knowing that my parents could go away at any time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I definitely remember getting home from school and like going to the house. And if I didn't see my mom there right away, because she would always be home 2 to 5, like, I remember just like having this like internal freak out of like, where is she? Is today the day where it's going to happen?
Yeah.
So I remember like I would just like call her and like to make sure she was still here, she was still safe. But it's also a weird experience, because growing up my parents didn't know the fear that I held, because it's something where like you don't want them to like think that they're the problem or that they're the reason why you're scared, you know, because they've also given up every single thing that they had to be here. So it's just been such a weird and crazy experience.
I can't imagine the fear that would bring at such a young age as well, and carrying around that and trying to be strong for your family. How did your parents, you know, get into the country, and what was their story like? Do you know, have they told you at what point they said, you know, we're gonna leave and we're gonna go somewhere new, somewhere different? What was that like?
Yeah. So my dad, so they both came here without knowing each other. So they met once they were in the U.S.
A love story.
Yeah. It's actually a really cute story. I'll get into it.
Tell me it.
But so my dad came here on a work visa and then it just expired. So he ended up staying because his uncle gave him like a really good job at a restaurant. And, you know, he wanted to be here. He knew everything here was better, so he wanted to stay here and provide for his family back home. Whereas my mom, she came here and her stories are like crazy.
Really?
Like, she has, like, she's told me stories with her and my aunt going across the river and like under the tunnels.
Really?
So they would go through like sewage tunnels.
Oh my gosh.
And she was like, I remember at one point we were under the tunnels and they're feet were on one side, their hands were in the other, like pressed up against their back, and there was like rats and water running. And she was like, I just remember like feeling so disgusting and stuff like that. But I think she went twice, because she went once with my aunt and then she went again to bring over like one of my uncles or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but then they ended up in Washington State. Okay. And my mom ended up nannying for a family who was the same family that my dad worked for.
Okay.
So the mom of that family was like, you know, told my mom that she had someone who she thought would be really great for my mom. So that's how they met. It was like a setup.
Yeah.
So yeah, they met and then they've like been in love ever since.
That's so sweet. And it's wild to think too. They both came from completely different places and then ended up there and still, you know, similar beginnings and met and have, you know, been together ever since. That's kind of funny how the universe works in that way. Have your parents told you, were they, the reason for coming to America? Because I feel like there are a multitude of reasons people could want to come to any different country for any different reason.
Yeah, they're both the oldest or one of the oldest of their families. So it was just to provide for their family. And to this day, they still send money back to like their family in Mexico, any family that they have. But they were kind of the term is like the blueprint family.
Okay.
Where they're the first ones to go and then they kind of get everything in order and the rest of the family kind of comes and they have everything set up for them. So it was just to provide for their family and to get a better life. And yeah.
It's such a selfless act. You know, it's a dangerous thing to do. It's a terrifying thing to do. Not only just to be here undocumented or to cross a border under dangerous conditions, but to like pave a new path in a new country. You know, I'm like the poster boy for privilege, and I can't imagine moving to a different country by myself. I can't imagine doing that where the stakes are so incredibly high. Probably the highest they are.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I always say to them. Like, I can't imagine that. But at the same time, it's like, in a way, I kind of can, because I am the first generation here. And a lot of what I do now, I do for like all my little cousins, you know? So it's kind of like, in a sense, I mean, it's generational trauma that I have, which is like a term that I've recently learned going through therapy and stuff. But it's like, I never realized how much of my experience is kind of the same as my parents, just in a completely different way. Whereas, like you said, they had to pave like a new way for their family. I'm also paving a way for like the younger generations for me. Like, I was the first one out of all of my cousins to go to a 4-year university and graduate. And
Get it. Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. And I like did it with honors and everything like that. But like, you know, navigating that was like so scary and tough. And it was something that like I couldn't ask my parents for help for because they'd never gone through it. So it's something that I had to figure out on my own. And it was definitely a really scary experience too. Like that whole college and high school life, it was just definitely scary.
Oh yeah. I mean, the potential, that moment in people's lives is so pivotal. And there are so many ways to quote unquote screw it up, because it's a horrifying system to be a part of. The collegiate system, it's so expensive. It's so exploitive. And to have that as a first generation immigrant and to do that by yourself, like that takes strength. That takes a lot of courage. So I completely commend you for that. You didn't have to do that. You know what I mean? Like you didn't have to do that and you chose to do it. And it's just like a beautiful story of courage again. So,
yeah.
So good on, yeah. What was it like to, I mean, something I think of, and or something I forget, but something I thought of while thinking about this more before the interview was, you know, like your parents obviously didn't have any documentation. What was it like living without, you know, like you, like, did they have a driver's license? How did they get anything? You know, nowadays you need a document for everything to have anything in this country, it feels like.
Yeah. So, my dad, like, cause he had a work visa here. He did have a license.
Okay.
I believe. And a lot of the times they would just use their Mexico like passports to get around.
Okay.
And like, that still works. Cause like no one in the system really knows. I don't know. It's kind of like hard to explain, but it's like no one in the system really asks for documentation.
Okay.
So it's nothing where it's like, if you didn't have your paper, like people don't ask you for your papers, I guess.
Yeah.
But they were both able to get their license, and like they both paid taxes, they own a business, like they're great. Able to do it all. And I know it's definitely not like that for a lot of other families, like I'm sure for other families. And like, I do know personally, I have a little cousin who's under DACA right now. And I know for him, he had to wait until all of his DACA was set up to apply for his license because he couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it's definitely just a waiting game. And I think it's different for every single family.
And I'm sure for every single state. I mean, Minnesota is kind of like a progressive island in the Midwest at the moment. You know, I can't imagine being in a southern state. I'm sure the laws are even more strict for things like that. They're not even allowing people to vote, let alone to have driver's license without like very specific documentation. They make it all so difficult. Which again is just like, it's strange that people are trying to take away rights from people who just want to live a better life and people who are just searching for something more. I went to Tijuana. That's the only time I've been to Mexico, but we went there to talk to a bunch of people who were seeking asylum. Mm-hmm. And it just blew my mind how long it can take for someone. Again, seeking asylum means you're most likely in a dangerous situation as well. Mm-hmm. And we're supposed to allow people in seeking asylum immediately. And people that were seeking it out of true, real life-threatening fear couldn't even get in. So I can't imagine what it's like for someone who isn't fleeing from, you know, someone threatening to kill their family, was a literal example from people that we talked to.
Yeah. Basically, like with my dad's situation, he's had a lawyer for years and years now. Like ever since I was little, I've heard him talk about the lawyer and them always talking about, you know, how when they're going to get papers, the timeline of getting papers. And like I said, it took them 21 years to get these papers.
Wow.
And once the 21 years, you know, once they were finally to get his residency, it was another 6 years to get his citizenship. So it's just like a long process. And then within that citizenship, he has to go through doing the citizenship test, which is like a whole nother thing.
I don't think I would get half of those questions right. There's some of them are so difficult and specific that it just feels like it's a punch in the gut to people, you know, as like a last step to then you have to take a quiz.
And the process for that is like insane. Like, so I helped my dad study for 5 years. So like, and he studied,
my God.
Yeah, he studied 100, all of the 100 questions that are on there.
Yeah.
And he did great. He passed that test. But what we didn't know is that there's also a reading portion and a writing portion.
Okay.
My dad passed the reading portion great, but the writing portion is something that he had trouble with. And he ended up not passing the first time. So then he had to wait, I think it was 6 to 8 more months to retake the citizenship test again. And then the second time he passed, but it's like, they make it so difficult. They don't tell you about the reading and writing portion.
Yeah.
And even when we got there the first time, I remember, cause I took him to get the test and we arrived like a little bit earlier and the like security person was already super rude to us. Like he was like, well, you guys are here so early. And we were like, oh, like, sorry. Like we don't know like where to go. And he's like, okay, well, wait for us downstairs. And he'd come up in like 5 minutes. And he like pointed at me and he was like, you can't come with though. Which was like so shitty because my dad, it's my dad's first experience. And he's obviously probably really anxious and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. And we like just like stood down there and waited. And I remember there was two people who were there before my dad. And my dad was kind of talking to them like, you know, being like, what should I expect, blah blah blah. And they both ended up not getting their citizenship either, so like I'm sure that also like made my dad feel kind of bad and like more anxious and stuff. And then I remember when I sent him like up to go to his appointment, like I said bye to him in the elevator, and then I just started having like the worst panic attack of my life.
Yeah.
Even though like, you know, that you know, they can't take him away now, you still get that feeling from like when I was like 6 and coming home and I didn't see my mom. Like I just got that same feeling of like, what if something happens and like all of a sudden he's going to get deported?
Yeah.
So it was like a really terrifying and like traumatic experience to go through.
I'm sure. And again, it's such a, to me, the process of wanting to become a U.S. citizen should be one that is so honorable, commendable, brave, et cetera, et cetera. So to have the people who are walking you through it be treating you shittily, it just doesn't make any sense to me. It should be so respectable. It seems like it's somewhere along the lines, I specifically know a portion of the timeline at which we kind of have gotten lost, past president, but where I don't know at what point we started seeing people who want to be a part of our country as the enemy or as dangerous or as evil or as bad. It just does not add up in my mind, yeah. Considering the country was founded by immigrants. It was made what it is by immigrants. It is great because of immigrants.
Yeah. And that's like even more crazy to me because, like I said, I have a cousin who's under DACA. He's been here since he was like 6 weeks old. Like he was basically born here. He was raised here.
Yeah.
And he's 18 now. And it's like every single time DACA has like, or something happens with DACA, you know, he has to worry about like, will he be able to get his papers for the next time he has to enroll in DACA again? Mm-hmm. And he has to like spend all this money. So it's like, they don't even make it easy for the kids who like had no choice coming here.
Totally.
So it's, I don't know, it's just crazy. The system is really messed up.
Yeah. And like a lot of systems, I think in America, it's just, it's rooted in something in the past that's horrible and needs to be updated, except it's all talk and no one seems to be changing it. It seems like there's a portion of people that want to, but for some reason it never quite gets there. Going back, I wrote down this because this is something that's personally frustrated me and annoyed me. You said that, yeah, it was difficult for your dad to do the writing and the speaking portion. Is that because English isn't his first language, I'm guessing?
Yeah, so English isn't any of our first languages.
Yeah.
My parents, you know, they speak fluent Spanish. Now they're a lot better at English. They own a restaurant, so that really helps them, mm-hmm. getting like interacting with them. But like he can't write in English that well at all. He uses like voice to text, and then it's really funny sometimes because like he has an accent, obviously, so it'll come out like all wrong, but he tries his best, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like writing is tough, and I think he got like, it was like the littlest thing too, like he spelt states wrong, like mm-hmm. I think he spelt it like s-t-a like TS or something like that, like something just like so little, and they're like, nope, like you failed, you can't do it.
It's a horribly hard language. Like, would you analyze English? None of it makes sense.
It's the hardest thing.
Yeah, I was like, there's a million different ways. Every letter can sound like six different ways. The combination of vowels, the pronouns, the possessive, everything changes with English. It's an incredibly difficult language. To learn as a child, let alone as an adult. It's harder to learn new languages as an adult. The thing that frustrates me with that is that I feel like a lot of people, one, see someone who is speaking English as their second language, they see them as unintelligent because they're struggling a little bit, or because they're taking time, you know, to translate in their head, or they make non-English speakers or people who haven't spoken English as their first language like the butt of a joke a lot of the times. They do it to a lot of, like, Sofia Vergara is a great example. I guess, like, what do you think of that? I imagine that's the most frustrating thing imaginable.
Yes. And like, I even have trouble, like I said, Spanish was my first language growing up. I learned English when I was pretty young though, because I have an older brother who went to school and did ESL and stuff. But even to this day, like, I know the way that I talk sometimes can be like upside. Like, I say the littlest things like the wrong way. And it's things that like I don't notice, but other people notice. And like they pointed it out to me. And it's always made me feel, like you said, like unintelligent, uneducated, and like makes me not want to even like talk about anything, because it's like, I don't want to sound dumb. I don't want to sound stupid.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, that whole thing of like people who can't speak English or who don't speak English as a first language being unintelligible never made sense to me, because it's like, we know two languages though, and like that's more than you, so like
exactly. Thank you. That's what I'm like, that person is much smarter than you, like,
yeah,
part of my French, but fuck you for making them feel less than.
Right. No, yeah. And like growing up, I never wanted to speak in Spanish. Like I would never speak to speak in Spanish to my parents, because they knew English well enough to like for me to speak English to them, and they would just respond in Spanish. So okay. I would never talk in Spanish. So I lost a lot of my Spanish growing up. And now I'm trying to use it more, because now I see how great it can be and like how wonderful it is to speak two languages. And like, if I ever have kids, but with this climate, who knows? Like, if I ever have them, I want them to know two languages. So yeah, it's just something that like has definitely been like a struggle, I guess I would say. Like even doing this whole podcast, like when I told like my friend about it, I was like, I don't know, I'm really nervous, because like just like the way that I talk, I know sometimes it like trips me up. And she's like, you just have to like go through it, like it's gonna be fine, you're gonna do okay.
Totally. And you're doing great, by the way. I think you're absolutely, yeah, you're incredibly eloquent. See, I'm the one that fumbled. No, that's, it's fantastic. I can't imagine. Again, I just can't imagine it would be a daily struggle. To, I guess, to flip things a little bit, tell me a little bit about, you know, the culture that was brought to your upbringing and your life, and what you remember about it, what you appreciate it, what, I guess, what was different between you and maybe your friends. Tell me a little bit about it. Bring me back to that place.
So I grew up in a predominantly white town, where I was like one of the only Mexican people in our town. So like our culture was definitely a lot different from those around me. Like even just celebrating holidays, the way we celebrate like Christmas is so different. Like we have tamales and like pozole, which is like a traditional dishes in Mexico. So like that's always been different. And like the music growing up, like whereas so many people like have listened to like the Beatles and Queens, I grew up listening to people like Juan Sebastian and Vicente Fernandez. Mm-hmm. So it's always been like such like a rich culture and just like colorful. And I feel like the Mexican culture is very big on family. Mm-hmm. And we're very, very much family oriented. So that's always been like a huge part of my culture. Like I grew up always seeing my cousins, always seeing my aunts and uncles. Like we always get together, and like there's 16 of us on one side, 18 on the other. So it's like big family parties.
Oh my just gosh.
Like, yeah. Like our family parties are like the most fun. We just like drink and like sing Mexican music and like eat really good Mexican food. And like, I don't know, just live. But like, it was definitely something that I didn't learn to appreciate until I went to college. Because very similar to like not wanting to speak in Spanish, when you grow up in a predominantly white town, you know, like when you try to celebrate your culture, you get looked at as like weird, or like you get those little remarks towards you of like those little microaggressions.
Totally.
So it wasn't until I moved up to Minneapolis and like saw more people like me that I was like, oh shit, being Mexican is cool. Like
totally.
I'm gonna start doing that more.
Totally. It's the, yeah, the experience of seeing other people like you or other people being celebrated for something that you yourself felt less than for. It's exactly how I felt when being gay, moving to Los Angeles. I got here and I was like, oh, there are rainbow sidewalks, women kissing women on the street. People seem to be okay with it here. Weird. I thought no one was okay with this. lot to unpack here. Gonna go find a therapist immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, therapy has also been like such a guiding light in this whole situation.
Yeah. Internal struggle finally being external. Gosh. What did you ever bring friends home, and were you like insecure about that, than bringing friends home to you know, like potentially a different culture than they had experienced, also into a situation with undocumented immigrant parents? You know, like, was that a scary thing to do?
I think it wasn't as scary just because I kept my parents being undocumented so under wraps that everyone, like, no one knew.
Okay.
Like, no one knew until they got their residency. And then I was like, I, you know, started speaking to people more about it. Like, they were like, oh, I would have never guessed that your parents were undocumented. And it's like, yep, no, they were. With like the whole culture thing though, I guess like sometimes there would be like little things that I was embarrassed of, or like not embarrassed, but just like, oh, I know that this isn't the same for them. Like, what if they don't like it? Like, particularly like the food.
Yeah.
Like, if my mom ever made like Mexican food, I was like, oh, what if they like don't like it? Like, what if it's too spicy for them or something? But
if it were white friends, it probably were. Like, they think,
right?
I say they, like, I'm not one. We think ketchup is spicy. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, but I think like the way, I don't know, like, I guess my parents, because my parents weren't ever really home that often either, because they worked just so much to like provide for their family back home.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the times my friends didn't really meet them. And like our house wasn't like completely like different culturally wise. So I wouldn't say it was like that scary to bring people to like my house and my culture. But when we had things like the 4th of July, when we do things like differently, that was always like a little bit intimidating until I did bring my friends over and they had like a blast. Like, they were like, this is crazy. Your family's so cool. Like, what the heck? We wish our parties were like this. So that always made me feel like good.
I bet. I want to be a part of it. It sounds fantastic. I'm like, my family gatherings, we did get together, but they were not a party. They were not necessarily super high energy and exciting. So can't necessarily relate to that. You were talking about work, which I have, you know, a few questions about. I feel like there must be a lot of fear involved in the work process as well, because I wish this weren't the case, but I imagine there can be an exploitation of vulnerability, of that vulnerability of being undocumented, in the form of longer work hours, lower wages. Mm-hmm. Was that ever a part of your parents' experience?
Well, so my parents own a restaurant. So they were there, or they are there, 6 days a week, open till close. But at one point, I remember my dad being at work every single day, 7 days a week, open to close, never taking a break, just because he needed to send money back to his family. He needed to provide for us. We were living with my uncle and aunt at that time, so I think he also wanted to have enough money for us to like move out and stuff. And like, he was definitely very unhappy. And then eventually, you know, we got him to like take a day off and have like breaks in between days. But even to this day, my parents just have like such a hardworking mentality, that like, it's definitely hard for them to take breaks for themselves. Like, they don't really understand self-care in a way that they like need to.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm losing like my train of thought, but
no, it's fine. It's the American experience. I feel like we've all been kind of in a way brainwashed into thinking that that like is the way to live, is, you know, work is life, living is about working, etc. And for a lot of people, you know, again, place of privilege here, like they do have to do that. But there's obviously a tipping point, like you said, where you get to a point where you're like, I cannot only work 7 days a week from sun up to sundown. It will destroy me in a way. And
yeah.
Whether that's a personal problem or most likely a systemic problem.
Yeah. And I think for them, it was really hard, and it still is really hard for them to understand. Like during when COVID was like more like in the beginning stages and everything was shutting down in Minnesota, my parents also like own a food truck. So they wanted to just do the food truck stuff so that way people can just grab their food and go. But I remember when the governor said like that Minnesota will have like a 2-week shutdown, my parents like didn't want to shut down because they felt so bad, like, for their customers, like not being able to provide for them and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is also like, I get it, but at the same time, like I said, they live in a very small town. It's conservative. So I remember just being like, but why are you caring so much about these people who vote so much against you? And like, if they knew your actual stories, like, who knows what they would say about you? Like, who knows what they would think about you?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, and that's like, I'll never understand how people can be that way when you're, it, you know, people of different backgrounds, stories, different levels of, just, you know, different levels of living are right in front of you, and you're willing to like overlook them out of fear or out of a misguided information that you've read in the media, where it's like, these stories are right in front of you. Mm-hmm. Listen, learn, and change and progress. I don't know how anyone would ever could ever do that to people, yeah. to human beings that they've met.
Yeah. And I think like from the town where I'm from, it's just such a normal thing to do that people just don't know any different. Like, mm-hmm. I remember one time when I went to the restaurant to like go eat out with my friends, there was a truck with a bumper sticker that was like, "You're in America, speak English." And I was like, how much of an oxymoron that you're going to like a Mexican restaurant where all the employees are Mexican, the owners are Mexican, they all speak Spanish. Like, just how crazy. And like when Trump was president, even like people would come in with their Trump hats, and it was just such like an oxymoron of like, but you're supporting an immigrant business, which is great, but like you're voting against them in every single way.
Yeah, it's like blatantly hypocritical, or it's frankly, it's just rude. It's like you can't preach one thing and then want it all at the same time. It doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah. But I suppose it's just, at the end of the day, it's a lack of awareness. They're not having this thought or this conversation, I'm sure.
Right. No, definitely not.
Gosh. What do you, I feel like one of the things, during the Trump era of it all, it made immigration super polarizing. You know, it's always been a hot topic, I feel like, for people, because everyone thinks that people who come here illegally are just outright bad and wrong. I guess, like, can you sort of dismantle any of those stereotypes that people have about, you know, why people come here and why sometimes it is illegal, or why sometimes they are undocumented?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of the reason why it's illegal or undocumented is because it's so hard to get into the United States any other way. Even if you just want to come in with like a visa, it takes months, sometimes years, to even get that visa. Like my grandma, she used to come here every single summer. She lives in Mexico. But because of COVID, she skipped a year. So that made her like lose track of when she needed to renew her visa. And she wanted to come this past summer, but got to the airport and then they realized that their visa was expired. And she couldn't get like a next day visa or something like you could with like a passport. You could do like an emergency passport kind of thing. She has to wait a whole nother year to come.
Oh my gosh.
So it's like the process of it is so long. But then once they get here, a lot of the times they're just providing for their family back at home. Like they're mm-hmm. not doing this for fun. They're doing it because they have to, and they know it's going to guarantee them a better life.
Yeah.
And a lot of things that I think people don't know is that like immigrants do pay taxes. That's like my number one thing, is like immigrants do pay taxes in so many different ways that I think a lot of people don't know, but they can pay taxes on their house, taxes on work. Even if they don't have like a social security number, they still do pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think the main reason is just them coming here to have a better life, support their family, and give their children a better life, because like that's what my parents did with me and my brother. And now it's like, you know, we're obviously very grateful and we're here and we're trying to give back to them.
Yeah, I mean, you're they're living proof of it, you're living proof of it. Like they're budding business owners, entrepreneurs, learning a second language, you going to college, everything. Like this is the American dream. This is the dream we should be supporting and not looking down upon. And this is the product of, you know, honestly, you're the product of what still happened, even though it was so difficult. So it's like, imagine if it were easier. Yeah. I think about how there was an article I read today that said something like, there are double the jobs when compared to the level of unemployed people. So there are the jobs to fulfill the unemployed people, as well as like there's so much extra land that's underutilized in the US. So it's not from a lack of, you know, jobs that we have. We're not like struggling to find jobs for people. So there's not a lack of land or money in this wealthy country. So like, why shouldn't we? Give me a reason why we shouldn't let more people into our country.
Yeah.
Give me a reason.
Yeah. And I think with that too, it's like you were saying, like the whole lack of job thing and stuff. A lot of the immigrants will take jobs that a lot of other people won't want, like working out in farms and crops and, you know, things like that. But yeah, so I think what you said is like spot on, especially like with that article. It's like there is no lack of resource for these other people. So why can't, you know, other immigrants come and be here and like we can just live with them and it'll be okay.
I know it's this thing of like, I think people, the more they talk, the more they come attached to something like this and they start to unknowingly dehumanize people. And it's like, just go meet someone who's an immigrant. I'm sure you have, you know, go meet someone who's an immigrant, go talk to someone who's in the process of becoming a citizen, etc. And just have empathy, you know.
Yeah, and I'm hoping like it'll get easier and easier as time goes on. Like I know there's like finally shows where they're highlighting more of like that immigrant experience. Like one show in particular that I really love is a show called Hentified.
Okay.
And it's just about this like Mexican family who like very similar to my family, like they own a business, the grandpa's undocumented, and then it shows like the three main grandchildren and just what life is like as a first generation like person. So that's like a show that I highly recommend to anyone who wants to learn more about the experience because it shows it in such a natural and beautiful way. It sadly got canceled after two seasons.
No, why do they always cancel the good ones?
I know.
They always do it.
It's so good. I highly recommend it because it explains so beautifully what it's like to just grow up in that situation.
It feels like we've had a lot more representation of, I guess, like just in general, like Spanish speaking culture, vaguely, you know, there've been a few, what was the Disney movie or the Pixar movie? There's
Encanto.
Yeah. And there was but wasn't there one more as well? Coco. And, I think about like all the, Spanish music that's become popular in the United States too.
Oh, yeah.
Rosalia. I love her. My queen, like the best. So it's, I think, yeah, more exposure to different cultures hopefully will only widen people's horizons on the human experience. Because again, the human experience is a gradient. It's not singular.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully with like the more and more generations coming, you know, they're becoming more and more accepting of everyone. So hopefully it'll just be easier for everyone. Because that's like my only like hope and dream that I have. Like I said, I have so many little cousins and like I went to like college and all that with them in mind. Like I didn't really do it for myself. I did it because like navigating life when you're a first generation person is so hard. And I didn't have anyone to ask questions to like to or any help. I didn't know that you needed like AP classes to get into certain colleges. I didn't even tour a college when I went to college because I didn't know that that was something that you needed. Mm-hmm. So it's like if I could help my cousins or anyone to just navigate life in general, then like that's what I like went to school for basically.
You're a beautiful person and so brave, and I really really love talking to you, so thank you so much for being here and sharing your story with everyone.
Thank you for letting me share it.
No problem. And that's it. Thank you so much for watching. Yet another fascinating conversation. I am just absolutely dumbfounded at the support around the podcast, as well as just the amazing stories that are unfolding. So I hope you're enjoying them as much as I am. Definitely click the like button, leave a comment down below, share this with your friends. I think these stories go so far beyond just me talking to another person. I think they can really open minds and really spark, hopefully, an even further conversation, because these are, you know, pretty real, hard-hitting topics, and I just think they deserve a spotlight and they're important conversations to have. So thank you again to Jess. Thank you for being so vulnerable and so honest with your story and your information. You know, this is something that I have little experience in, about, and around, and I just felt really, really honored that you would be so forthcoming with this with me, and you wanted to share it with me and the world. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. If you have any topic suggestions, people you think I should interview, please leave it in the comments down below. Please send me a message, an Instagram DM. I would love to hear your stories, and I would love to share them with the world. So definitely please do that. But that's all I got for today. Thank you again for listening. Thank you for watching. Thank you for supporting. Drink a chilled glass of H2O. Get a good night's rest. Get vaccinated if you can. Get boosted if you can. Be nice. Be kind. Be warm and be peaceful. And I will see you or hear you in hear you. I will see you will see or hear me in the very next episode. Okay. Bye.